Hello and welcome to the UK Gamer Podcast. My name's Rob and I'm going to be your host for the next few minutes. And I hope you enjoy hearing about all the things going on in the gaming universe. First of all, I'm going to give you an update about what I've been up to. Recently, I've been to some war game shows. In particular, I went to Penarth near Cardiff. And I enjoyed my time there at that show. My local games club actually put on a kind of demonstration participation game. And that was excellent fun. We spent a few weeks developing some rules for that, and we actually played a 54mm World War II skirmish game. And basically we were the defenders holding a factory, and the guest players were trying to kick us out and attacking us with a full platoon. And the odds were heavily in favour of the defender, but the attackers should win as long as they didn't just suicidally charge the heavy machine guns. Of course, some people would sacrifice quite a lot of their men to work that out, and I think most people who joined in really enjoyed it. What was interesting is there seemed to be a couple of large-scale games there, and I really recommend, if you're into wargaming, you have a look at the 54mm stuff. Slightly down in size from that is 28mm, and lots of exciting things have been going on in that arena. You had the Perry hard plastic figures, the ancient hard plastic figures by a couple of manufacturers, and rather interestingly, Perry brought out Napoleonics and promptly were followed by Vitrix, who also brought out some hard plastic Napoleonics. I happened to pick up the Vitrix range because I wanted to buy some British, and Perry at the time hadn't brought out any Brits. And Vitrix have announced they hopefully should soon be bringing out the French and Highlanders to complement the current range of the centre and flank units. They're nice little figures. They're customisable, being hard plastic, very easily. They have a fairly regular look. You get a couple of poses, fairly good mix of poses. If you buy just one box, you might be a bit frustrated. They do some really good bundle deals. And I picked up a couple of extra boxes to go with the ones I had. And I've actually assembled about two boxes worth and got quite a few figures already just from that. And it's a good job too, because we're hoping to play 28mm in the Grand Manor down at the Games Club. And if you're aware of that, you have very big units and you want quite a few units, and therefore you need a big table, particularly in 28mm. Sticking with Napoleonics, and a much smaller scale, and a scale that in some ways is almost my most popular scale, and that's 6mm. Now, Bacchus have been big fans of the 6mm. In fact, that's all they do. And in the Napoleonic range, they've actually refurbished the Brits and brought out a couple of new products and announced some new products. They've also, of course, brought out the second edition of their rules, the Pulmus rules. So I picked those up, and they look really good fun. So I'm looking forward to painting up the figures and letting them hit the table. I was also intrigued to see they've actually updated some scenarios and put them on the Yahoo group. So if you're into the 6mm, definitely check out Bacchus and go swing by their Yahoo group and pick up any hints and tips and new updates for their products there. They've also updated their Ancients range, which is becoming very interesting to me, because there is a rumour that the Pulmus Ancients games might be in danger of coming out this year. Although I have to stress, I believe it is a rumour rather than an official announcement. I'll be going to Bacchus's website sometime in the next few days to see where the status is of that, because I've had my eye on that for a while now, because 6mm gaming on the 60mm bases just looks awesome. And if you haven't seen it, try and find a show where they're doing a 60mm base, 6mm figure demonstration game. It just looks awesome. Loads and loads of figures. And not that expensive, particularly compared to, for example, like 28mm or 20mm metal figures. With the wargame theme, there are sort of kind of like crossover products, kind of a bit of a mix between board games and war games. And one of those is by Nexus, the Wings of War range. And there's actually two product lines. There's the World War I and the World War II. I'm a big fan of the World War I game series, and they've announced quite a few bits for that. The third set of miniatures have come out, and picked up those. And I'm looking forward to Series 4 and onwards. But what came out of the blue to me was mention of a game mat. And now, I'd been looking at game mats for flying my planes over, and sure enough, someone's actually said, yeah, let's do that, that's a good idea. So there is going to be a game mat for Wings of War, which will allow you to fly over some kind of trench systems and everything, and I'm really looking forward to actually seeing that and picking that up. And of course, they've also announced a load of expansions, and several of those look well worth adding to your collection. But probably of more interest to lots of people is the fact that they've actually released some pictures of the World War II miniatures to go with the World War II range. And they're looking pretty good. The Zero looks really good. And the Spitfire, unfortunately, the picture, I think, could be a better one. But I'm sure they're ironing out any little glitches before going into full production, because their World War I stuff's been awesome. So I can't believe their World War II stuff will let them down. So definitely check out Nexus, and of course they're also distributed by Fantasy Flight Games. Sticking with the kind of war game theme, Multi-Man Publishing's Advanced Squad Leader. Quite a few bits and pieces there. If you haven't seen it, the Designer's Handbook is well worth having a look at. And of course, the pre-orders have shipped for Turning the Tide and Action Pack 5. So if you pre-ordered that, hopefully that should be coming through soon. And if you didn't pre-order it, I believe it's now actually available as a actual product on their product ordering page. There's also a bit of hoo-ha, of course, with Yanks having run out, and Beyond Valor constantly being in and out of stock. I believe it currently is in stock, so if you want to pick up a copy of Beyond Valor, get to MMP's website ASAP and get yourself a copy. Now, with regard to ASL, it'd be remiss of me not to mention that there is a podcast that's just dedicated to ASL, and I think they're doing a really good job, so I'd like to give a shout out and say hi to the two half squads. Go check out their podcast. It's ASL, ASL, and more ASL. And I've really enjoyed listening to them, and they've really helped me start to get my head around the lawyerese that is ASL. And I'm looking forward to getting that on the table and playing through starter kits 1, 2, and 3, and then on to full ASL. Again, sticking with the wargaming theme, there is an alternative to ASL by Academy Games, and that's called Conflict of Heroes, and that's looking like it's going to be quite a good range of games. Awakening the Bear has come out first, that's in Russia, 41-42, and they've just announced Kursk 43, which should hopefully come out sometime around summer, maybe, I guess, going towards Christmas time. But far more interest to me in some ways than the announcement of Kursk was that Academy Games have actually picked up the rights to Sturm Europa. And that looks like a really good game, and I'm getting quite excited by it. It's actually a block war game covering the whole of the European War, 1939 to 1945. And it looks really good. It's got some nice little mechanics, a blending of various options, an interesting little battle system. And basically, you're fielding armies. You're not fielding squads. It's like this army's going into that section of the map, and it's going to take out those two armies, and this is how I'm going to do it. And here's some, you know, oil to make it happen, and here's some R&D, and it's all sorts of things. Obviously, a bit early days to be able to say exactly what is and isn't going to be in the game, but it's kind of slated, by the sounds of it, for a release around December. So I'm going to be keeping a close eye on that. It's a game I'm getting very excited by. Talking about board games, the hot games of the moment have been like Pandemic and Agricola. And I'm in an RN, did I want them? And I've actually picked them up now, and I've actually had a chance to play Pandemic. In fact, I just finished playing it about an hour ago. I haven't yet managed to play Agricola because I'm waiting for it to arrive. When it does, I'll no doubt melt my brain reading the rulebook, and then melt it even more by actually trying to play the game and beat my friends. So I'm looking forward to that. Now, the final thing I'm going to talk about before taking a little break is role-playing games. Now, in the role-playing game world, there was a bit of sad news, to my mind, last year, about October time. Dying Earth, a really good game system that I really, really enjoy. Its license has run out, and it was announced in October that it basically was on a six-month life support. He's got to basically stop selling it in 6 months' time, so guess that would make it around June time, that you'll no longer be able to get it. So if you're interested in Jack Vance and haven't picked it up, go now to Pelgine's website and pick it up immediately. If you've already bought bits and pieces of it, now's your last chance, really, to fill out your collection. Now, the Dying Earth system I thought was really good, and it got me very intrigued. by the offerings that were available from Pelgrain, and they were talking about this thing called the Gumshoe System, and there was the Esoterists, Fear Itself, and Trail of Cthulhu, and that all sounded really good. And when I heard Trail of Cthulhu, my ears pricked up, and I thought, I've got to go check that out. Now, Pelgrain have just announced Mutant City Blues is actually going to be hitting production and should be available probably by the time you get to hear this. Or if not, at least you'll be able to pre-order it. Now, Esoterris is also being rounded out with a fact book. Now, I think one criticism you could probably make at Esoterris, it had a really intriguing setting, but not much information about it. Well, this fact book looks like it's going to solve that little dilemma to you. Possibly very wordy and very rich and very fluffy and not something you want. But hey, at least it's its own book, so you can pick up the rules and the book and get everything you want, or just say, oh, I don't need all that fluff, I just want the rules, and go for the rule book. But Trail of Cthulhu is the thing I'm particularly interested in. And I have to declare a potential for bias here. I was so intrigued by it, I actually got myself into the playtesting group, and I've actually got a credit in the rulebook as a playtester. So, you know, I've always been quite intrigued by the Trail of Cthulhu products. There's a couple of bits out there for it. And Filmland is something that should be coming out again on either pre-order or as an actual product real soon. And again, I actually did a bit of playtesting on that, and it's quite an interesting little product. Rather pleasingly, there also seems to be another load of stuff in the pipeline as well. So it's being well supported, and I think it's a very good selling system. Now, some people have been intrigued by it, but not committed, because after all, if you're talking about Cthulhu and H.P. Lovecraft, you have the Mammoth and part of my Holy Trinity, the Call of Cthulhu rule system. I think they're both really, really good, and I would have no qualms in recommending you have both. But obviously, you know, your mileage may vary. But when you talk about Cthulhu, your mind probably drifts off to Yog-Sothoth. Now, if you're into HPL, you've got to go check out Yog-Sothoth's website. They're really, really great guys, and they have their own podcast called Yog Radio, and that's well worth a listen. And in fact, I'm going to have a little message from them while I go off and take a break. And when we come back, we're going to be talking about board games. And in particular, I'm going to be talking about the Carcassonne range. And in particular, from my point of view, the game I like the most out of them is Carcassonne the Discovery. And I'm going to hopefully justify why I like that game. And maybe persuade you that you should like it too. So anyway, talk to you in a bit, just after this message.
Quick, shut that door, man.
As if that's going to stop it.
Look, it's not my fault the Elder Sign didn't work.
That's because it's shaped like a star.
No, it's shaped like a tree.
Star!
Tree!
Star! Well, it's too late now. We're the last ones.
What about Lady Hetherington?
She set on fire, then exploded.
And Father O'Leary?
He plucked out his own eyeballs and ate them.
Damn. I wish I'd visited Yog-Sothoth.com more often.
Yog-Sothoth.com?
Yes, you know, that Call of Cthulhu website. Jolly useful. It's got forums, news, even interviews with the great and the undead.
Oh, I do wish you hadn't said that.
Oh, my lord! Stay away from me, you horror! No!
Well, you'll not take me! What? No! Please, no!
Yog Radio, a Cthulhu podcast from yogsothoth.com.
Well, hello and welcome back. Right, I'm going to be talking about the Carcassonne range, and I'm particularly going to focus on my favourite, the Discovery. Well, what is Carcassonne? Well, Carcassonne was a game that came out in 2000, and it basically consists of you playing tiles. And each tile has various features on it, and there's certain rules as to how those tiles can be placed, and some positions are legal and some positions are illegal. Having placed a tile, you have the opportunity to place a little wooden playing piece known as a meeple. And that meeple will score you points with various features. And the features that we're particularly concerned with are cities, roads, cloisters, and fields. And the fields are slightly different to the other features. With the fields, if you put your little meeple on there, it's pretty much going to stay there for the whole game. and hopefully score you big points right at the end. The other features, though, as soon as they're complete, you get your little wooden man back, and you get some points. And the idea is to have the most points at the end of the game. So it's one of these games where there's no player elimination. Everyone plays till the end of the game. However, of course, if someone plays much better than you, it's going to become fairly obvious that you're unlikely to catch them up. There's quite a lot of good strategy and variation within the game. Every game's different because you build the board as you go from your collection of tiles. And sometimes you'll feel that you're not getting the tiles you need and the other player is and you can't do anything. Well, sometimes maybe you need to attack their position to weaken what they're doing and hope the tiles swing back in your favour. Now, virtually every year since it's come out, there's been expansions. There's probably about 12 expansions in total. Now, some of those expansions are actually bundles. For example, in 2008, there was a bundle that came out with three expansions in one box. So there's probably about seven full-sized expansions and a few little minor expansions. Now, after a while, the big box of Carcassonne came out in, I think it was 2006, and it was basically the game with about four expansions included. Now, interesting news, Rio Grande has apparently announced a new big box coming in 2009. So this year, hopefully you should be able to get a new big box, and that's going to be the base game with seven expansions included. And for information about that, I suggest you go to the Rio Grande website and have a look. And that's one way to maybe save yourself a bit of money if you know you're going to be buying into all the expansions. Now, there's a lot of debate as to whether or not you should just buy the base game or buy the big box with all the expansions or just buy the base game and the few expansions you actually like. And that's a hard one to answer, really. If you know you're just going to want the base game and you're also thinking you want to be travelling around, there is also a travel edition. And that's basically made out of cloth and packs down nice and small. But personally, I think even the base game can pack down nice and small if you're prepared to take all the bits out of the box and wrap them carefully before packing them. Now, there have been some spin-offs from Carcassonne. There's been Hunters and Gatherers, which was 2002, The Covenant, which was 2003, The Castle and the City, which were 2003 and 4, and my favourite version, The Discovery, in 2005. There's also been a New World, or a Mayflower, depending on how you like to refer to it, edition, which came out last year. Now, with regard to this Discovery, some people think it's better than the original, some people think it's worse. And it all depends on your point of view. Part of the problem with the spin-offs is really none of them have got any expansions for them. Some of them, the expansions for Carcassonne are also compatible with them, but pretty much the spin-offs are standalone games. They're just the one box, you buy it, and you're good to go. And that's one advantage of the Discovery. You just buy the one box, you know it's good to go, and unless they have a change of heart, you know you're not going to have to worry about buying all the expansions and do I want to use this expansion or that one. It's just everyone knows exactly where you stand. Now, where Discovery is slightly different is, unlike in Carcassonne, you don't automatically score. So you're laying your tiles, you're laying your meeples, and if you don't pick the meeple up, you don't get any points. And that's really good, because the big problem is, in the Discovery, they don't give you enough meeples. You always find that you place a tile, you think, oh, I want to score that, that'd be really good, I'll put a meeple on, all my meeples are on the table. Now, simple, you just take a meeple off another tile, score the points, but the problem then is you can't put your meeple on the tile you've just laid. So you've got to always manage, do I have enough meeples in my pool? Do I have enough meeples on the table to secure the various scoring opportunities? And sometimes a very good strategy can be to have just one meeple that you're constantly cycling. But of course, the problem there is if you've got four big scoring opportunities and you're kind of out of meeples, then when the next big scoring opportunity comes round, you've got a problem. You've got no meeples left. There are also rules about where you can and can't place meeples. For example, if someone's on a field and you place a field of your own that attaches to their field, because they are already on the field, they possess the field. But you can get around that with strategic placement of your tiles. Let's say you've got a field and a mountain tile. So you butt your tile up against the mountain range, put your meeple on the field, and then when the next tile comes out, you can use that to join your field to your opponent's field. And that's allowed. And there's lots of little strategies like that. Now, it's actually quite hard to describe how the game plays. I think it's one of those games that is best to be seen. And there's a few ways you can do that. If you want to get a feel for how the original Carcassonne plays, well, if you've got an Xbox 360, download the free trial from Xbox Live. And, of course, if you've got the Microsoft points, you can always pay to upgrade it, and then you can start buying all the expansions. And it's really good. And one of the good things about the Xbox 360 is you don't have to worry about all the horrible maths of working out the points. The computer does it all for you automatically. And there's some great little animation. And in particular, some people like to make the meeple do a little happy jig by saying, place it here, place it here, place it here. And it kind of bounces up and down and does a little jig. And it's quite amusing for about 10 seconds. And after about 2 minutes, you just say, have you finished placing that tile? I'd like to have my turn. And that's what's really good about the Xbox 360. You can play with people in the room, or you can play across Xbox Live. And of course, with people across Xbox Live, you can also talk to them via your headset. And it's a really good gaming experience. So it's definitely worth looking at. After all, you can download it for free. And if you like it, you can then go out and buy the board game. Now, with regard to the discovery, you're going to have to actually go and watch someone demonstrating it. And the best person I can recommend for that is Scott Nicholson of Board Games with Scott. In fact, the way I really got back into board gaming in a big way was by watching Board Games with Scott, coming across his Carcassonne video. And I had a good watch of that several times over, and I thought, hey, that game looks really, really good. So I went out, bought a copy, and since then, pretty much anything that Scott recommends, I have a really close look at, and some things I disagree and don't buy, but I tend to find he's bang on the money. If he thinks a game's good, as long as you're prepared to give it a go, you're going to enjoy yourself. And he does a really good job of explaining the game and how it works and all that good stuff. Unfortunately, it is quite a lengthy process, so he might be putting that project on hold. We'll have to see. A lot of people are screaming and demanding he doesn't give up, but whatever he does, I think you appreciate that he's put a lot of effort in there, and it's definitely worth having a look at. So, why do I particularly like the discovery? Well, part of the reason I like it is in many ways it's simpler than Carcassonne. You don't have to worry about the complex scoring. You don't have to worry about which expansion set shall I use and do I want to use this one and that one. You just pick up the box and play. Now, the other advantage about it is it's cheap. It's actually a really good, cheap little game, and I've had hours of fun. In fact, I think I've logged about 25 games of it, which might not sound much, but when you're doing role-playing one day and Xbox another day and wargaming another day, and you're only doing that once or twice a week, if you think about it, that's quite a lot of play. And in addition, out of those plays, each play is typically about an hour. Now, you can play it quicker than that, or you can play it much longer than that, because one of the problems with the Carcassonne games is you can get this kind of analysis paralysis where you're looking at your tile, you're looking at the table, you're looking at everyone's meeples, and you're thinking, should I put it here? Should I put it there? Do I want to put my meeple on? Where do I want to put it on? Which bit's the best scoring? How far ahead are they? If I put it there, I'll score this many points. And you can just get locked into a head spin where you don't do anything. You just sit there thinking, and people start fidgeting. So you can suffer a bit with downtime. Now, to be honest, I think you can suffer with that with any of the Carcassonne range, but I tend to find with Discovery, it just doesn't happen for me quite so much as with Carcassonne. Other people say it's the other way around. But there you go, each to their own. Well, I hope you're intrigued by the Carcassonne range, and in particular the Discovery. As I say, if you want to have a good idea of how it all works, what I recommend you do is go check out the Xbox 360 version for the original game mechanic, or for the variant, the Discovery, go check out Board Games with Scott. And once you've had a watch of his video, hopefully when you come back, listen to this, it'll make more sense. Now, I'm going to just give you a couple of my little tips, which you may violently disagree with, but they might be worth trying out if you've never played the game before. With the Discovery, you've got two options. You can go for the big score or the little scores. Now, the big scores is you just hope to build big features, and the bigger the features, the more tiles you have, and the more tiles you have, the more points your meeple's going to score. Now, the problem with that is it might never happen. You might be laying tile upon tile upon tile, and in the end, the game ends, and what you thought was going to get you 30 points only gets you 15. And maybe if you'd gone for lots of little scores, you would have had 20 points. So not as big as the big score, but more than the little score. And this is one of the things you've got to trade off. Do you place some meeples right at the start and just leave them on there? Or do you just put them on, take them off, put them on, take them off, put them on, take them off, and then when the big opportunity comes along, leap on? So that's one of your little tips there. The other tip is if someone looks like they've got a really big scoring opportunity, either try and work out how to join in the fun, and therefore they score 20 points, but you also score 20 points. Or alternatively, shut them down. So, okay, yeah, they're going to score 20 points, but that's better than letting them score 30. And, of course, that is one of the things that can lead to analysis paralysis. I tend to find going with your gut often works really well. One thing you do need to try and remember as well is what tiles have been used. Some tiles, there's only one of them. Other tiles, there's maybe only two or three of them. And if two of them have been played and there's only two of them, there's no point putting your meeple in a position which requires that specific tile to complete the feature, because you're never going to draw it. It's already on the table. So being able to kind of card count, so to speak, will be very, very useful. Obviously, you can actually use this against your opponent. If you know that all the tiles of a certain type are out and they're going for a big score, well, deliberately place a tile which makes them think they're going to keep going for the big score, but you know that the tile they need is never going to happen. And therefore, they'll leave their meeple there, and at the end of the game, okay, maybe they've scored 10 points, but if they'd completed it, it would have been at least 20 points. In the meantime, you've got off somewhere else, scored 11 points, you win, you've got one more point. And that's my final tip. Keep an eye on where the points are on the board, how many points you've actually banked, and how many tiles are left, and in particular, how many tiles are left that you can actually use to convert your formations into completed formations, because you actually get more points for complete features. So make sure you keep an eye on all of those things. Okay, well, we're all done for episode one. On the next show, I haven't quite determined exactly what I'm going to do yet. I'm going to wait and see what happens with a few developments, and I'm then going to act accordingly, and I'll let you know what that's going to be. If you've got any feedback or suggestions, obviously, please get in touch. I'd love to hear from you. So, until next time, take care, and good gaming.